name's Angela Curtis. I'm the sole proprietor of Grounded LLC, a company that's started in the last year to create humus-structured compost and to continue my work as a land preservation specialist.
Tell us a little bit about your history with this character called Chris Mann.
I was working for 8 years as a land protection specialist for the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust, which is a nonprofit land trust, and their ability to preserve farmland, especially organic farmland, was dismal. That was prior to 2008. And so a friend of mine stumbled across a job announcement for Yggdrasil Land Foundation as a project director. And after reading the announcement and not having a clue what biodynamic agriculture was, I decided to submit a resume, because regardless of what biodynamics was, what I did know about it was that it brought a sacred spiritual aspect into agriculture, and I felt like that was missing not only in agriculture but in life in general outside of church. So it was a new exciting opportunity, and I was hired as a consultant and eventually became their acting executive director up until 2011 when they ran out of funding. And then Christopher Mann took me on privately to help him with his estate and land preservation of 900 acres and buildings and residential, commercial, that would eventually all go to Yggdrasil Land Foundation.
So who is this guy, Chris Mann? Who is this character?
Christopher Mann is my friend. He's my mentor. He's my colleague, my boss, and now he's just a dear friend who I gain inspiration from. Christopher was born in England. He's an Englishman, although his family's roots are from Germany, Kaufman. Royalty, my understanding is. And his grandfather used to do oil exploration in the Carpathian Mountains of Europe. But Christopher married Martina Mann, Martina Voigt, and started them on an incredible journey of eventually coming to America in the 70s to bring biodynamic agriculture and education to the United States, which originally came in the 1940s by Aaron Fried Pfeiffer, who helped to start the Biodynamic Association, and he was one of the prime students of Rudolf Steiner back in the 20s. So the Manns have done incredible work with their wealth for humanity through land preservation and through interested individuals in sustainable agriculture and organics, and particularly biodynamic agriculture, with some of their projects being here in the United States, Michael Fields Agricultural Institute and Yggdrasil Land Foundation, which is a land trust that works nationally to preserve organic and biodynamic farms. And they have a host of accomplishments in Europe with land trusts and social investment banks, as well as through projects of residential green developments, of agricultural institutes, of preservation initiatives, and mostly of trying to build awareness and higher consciousness in individuals that he meets. And I guess I'm one of those lucky individuals that have met Christopher Mann.
What is biodynamics?
Biodynamics is a living, biological, and always changing agriculture. And agriculture being, you know, the land and culture being part of it, which has been removed since the industrialization of agriculture and the onset of synthetics and chemicals in the 50s. biodynamic agriculture was coined by Rudolf Steiner in 1924, and it preceded organic agriculture. And biodynamics is similar to organics in terms of inputs and having a closed farm loop fertility system, but it's also differs in organics in that it brings ancient agriculture concepts to the table, one being utilizing planetary and cosmic forces as well as moon forces to propagate healthy plants and to build soil fertility through use of herbs and anthroposophical medicines per se.
Anthroposophical. What does that word mean?
Anthroposophical. Anthroposophy is something, again, that Steiner coined, but it's the study of human wisdom, the study of human knowledge. And his work as an artist, as a scientist, as an engineer, as a mathematician, as a naturalist, as a educator, as a seer and a clairvoyant, was to look at humans' evolutionary development through time and how we have the capacity to meet and live in a world that's non-physical as much as the spiritual. So it's a way to increase our capabilities of being good people on the planet, of caring for each other, of loving, of caring for the earth and all that it provides us. And it spawned off of the theosophy movement that was moving in Europe back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. So it's a form of study as much as it is a way of being and of living in the world.
So Rudolf Steiner is the founder of biodynamics?
Yes.
And did he borrow a lot of practices from someone, or did he basically invent these practices himself?
Steiner was able to sense things from the plant world, just like a rainforest shaman could identify a medicinal plant and know that it could cure a headache or a toothache in the rainforest. So he had indications of what different plants could do to benefit the living plant world. And he also looked at animals as being, you know, sacred and an important, a vital part of agriculture. In fact, most, when you say biodynamic agriculture, it includes animals for fertility as well as much as for, you know, product or sustenance.
What is compost?
What is compost? Compost is the end result of taking organic natural resources and allowing nature to go through a decomposition process through microbial action to break down substance and to turn it into a nutritious supplement or amendment for the land. Compost comes in many flavors and many structures, and the goal truly of compost is to feed the organisms that live in the soil, the microbial life, which are truly the beings that transfer nutrients to our plants. And unlike conventional agriculture, that plants are forced to drink, you know, insoluble nutrients, synthetic nitrogens. The microbes are able to digest every macro and micro element that exists within the soil and digest it and structure it within a humus-structured complex that the roots of a plant then target and access for their sustenance, and that includes water and nitrogen and all of the other elements that we need for a healthy diet.
What is humus?
Humus is a structure at the surface of the earth that is broken down plant and mineral material that are gone through a digestive process through microbial action that, again, is the living aspect of our structure, surface structure of the earth. And humus is made up of clay, you know, a colloidal clay, which is sort of elastic and many-sided, so other nutrients and elements can attach to those clay particulates. And it's also incorporates the secretion of these microorganisms of all the things that they've digested in the soil. And they've designed a insoluble, structured, sort of, I guess, call it food source for plants to find their sustenance through, and then we find our sustenance through it. So it's really the living top structure of our planet that's taken millions of years to create, in which we've taken hundreds of years to excavate and destroy. So
is it soil, or is it a component of soil?
It's a living part of soil. It can be made up of sand and particulates of clay and organic matter and of microbes.
You mentioned that there are different kinds of compost, different styles, you might say. Can you give us some insight into some of those?
What I'm finding is that a lot of companies are using dry matter, carbon, to decompose and break down through mechanical processes. So they're using, you know, industrial systems are using turning machines, and they're processing dry mulches or wood chips and leaves and other carbaceous materials, possibly food scraps that bring a nitrogen component. Very infrequently, for commercial compost, are you finding manures in in compost? But essentially, you know, the utilizing a compost that's made up of animal manures, you know, not only brings a rich microbial presence through the digestive process of that animal, but it also brings this, you know, highly nitrogen-based and phosphorus-based to a compost system. And if properly mixed with carbon at a 30-to-1 ratio, which is the ratio that microorganisms function best on in terms of what they prefer or how they prefer to digest material at, that it's really important to have a balance of your carbon to nitrogen. So when you're using only a carbon in a compost system, you basically have an empty nutrition of the end result. And often it's very black and it's very airy. So black, when you look at a black forest soil, there's a lot of leaf litter and a lot of broken down, decomposed forest material, and it's rich. But it's not to say it's filled with, you know, all the nutrients a plant that we as humans eat, you know, need. So the structure of a humus structured compost is one that looks and feels and smells like soil, and it could be mistaken for a rich topsoil, you know, that has a nice humus structure to it. So it's moved through the decomposition process by natural microbial activity, and it's moved that, you know, random materials of manures and straws and lake weeds from surrounding lakes into a soil complex, which is a much hardier food for farm fields, gardens, lawns, flowers. I mean, you know, and it adds a elasticity to the structure. It adds a soil retention capacity to that structure in droughty conditions, and it adds a very self-sustained, slow-release complex to the nutrients. So in a flood period, they're not going to all wash out like you would with a raw manure, but it's going to stay, those nutrients are going to stay adhered to the structure of the compost because of its natural design.
You use a hut method, correct?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's called a heat-guided or hot-fermented compost method, and my understanding, it was a method used back in the 12th century by the Cistercian monks and the Templars to guide the life forces of microorganisms and to provide them the best environment for their proper digestion of material. And in having the correct carbon to nitrogen ratio and having the correct moisture content and having a correct aeration, bringing aerobic activity to the pile, that the microorganisms can function and digest at a very rapid pace, which it causes the heat. So the heat that we find in a hot system is created by these microbes. And to imagine, you know, taking a teaspoon and that there are millions of microorganisms in one teaspoon, you know, it's just a phenomenal life process. And the hot fermentation is an incredible process that creates a very fast, within 3 to 5 months, you can go from a raw material to a finished, beautiful, soil structured, earth smelling compost. And your carbon loss in the whole process is maybe 20% versus in a cold process, 50 to 60%. So part of the rapidness is also a way to utilize as many resources as you can without losing your resource. And the hot fermentation is also integrates biodynamic principles. So there are 6 different inoculants of herbs that are used to treat the compost windrows, and they're done at a succession in the beginning of the process, but they're placed within the compost to actually increase temperature. They all represent different elements that are randomly within that material, and they also have association and relationships with the different planetary forces that are streaming in towards our planet that affect us as well as plant life. And so it's a way of creating harmony and organization of random material to allow a quickening process as part of the effect.
There's only so hot you go with your compost, right? What is that temperature and why?
I was trained to not let the compost go beyond 158 degrees. At that temperature, you can get a die-off of the microbes that you are encouraging to break down the matter. And so if the compost goes beyond that temperature, you need to open up the pile. You need to give it water. Water will decrease the temperature. But remember, when you open a pile, you're also giving it air, which microbes also need. So they need moisture and they need air, just like we do. So this hot process is basically a guided process of maintaining temperatures, of maintaining air, of maintaining turns and not frequent turns. I mean, it's usually on a 3 to 4 week cycle, because your goal is to allow those microbes to continue to upbuild and digest and to create a design or a structure within the material over time. And if we turn too much, we would actually be a detriment to their building up process, which is the true goal. So I guess it's a process of balance and a watchful eye of what you're trying to provide the best condition for microbial activity.
What has and is Martin Agriculture doing to our soil?
Back in the early 1900s, Europe was going through what they called the Green Revolution. And today we look at the words Green Revolution as being something beneficial to the environment, to prosper green. But back then it was the greening movement of using chemicals and synthetics to increase agriculture production. And in 1924, when Rudolf Steiner gave the agricultural course, it was at the call of farmers that were practitioners who were noticing that they could no longer plant year after year of crops, and that they were finding a depletion in the soil nutrients. And the new form of agriculture that was supposed to green and bring more agriculture production seemed to be having ill effects on the productivity of the soil and the soil life. And Steiner gave a series of lectures that they called the agricultural course, that looked at, you know, how these man-made synthetics and chemicals, you know, the detriment they were having on microbial activity, which is truly, you know, the key component to proper nutritional transfer of soil nutrients to the plants and then to us. And when you kill your microbes, you're actually just decimating the function of a living soil to transfer those nutrients. So as a replacement, we feed it NPK in industrial systems, and we...
Which is nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Correct. And we give it to them in often a soluble form that the plant drinks like it's drinking water. And because of that effect, the plants grow big, they grow robust, but they don't necessarily grow strong. And so then we have issues with pests and insects and...
And then maybe they're nutritionally compromised as well.
Exactly, because they're only getting three nutrients versus a whole panel of macro and micro elements. So thus our plants are weak, and they're more prone to pests and to growing of weeds, and because the soil is unhealthy. A weed basically represents an unhealthy soil. A pest basically represents an unhealthy soil. So, you know, our industrial system is then attack that those two entities with chemicals, and then that brings on a whole nother slew of challenges to the soil and the death of microbes, and so you get into this vicious cycle, and eventually your soil becomes dead. It becomes a substrate to hold a plant upright instead of a living system that is providing a full, you know, spectrum of nutrients that the plant needs.
A structure, the hope to plant upright, and then also a medium for the application of agricultural pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, exactly. And with the, you know, increase of chemicals and pesticides, you know, there had to be a change then in how plants are structured, and the advent of genetic modification of plants took place in 1995. And if you look at statistics, I think especially in Brazil and South America, you can, and I'm sure here in the United States, but you can look at, you know, bell curves of how the advent of chemicals and the advent of GMOs also correlate to the increases in cancers and different illnesses that people are experiencing. And you know, we as a culture are now faced with many, many sicknesses and many illnesses, and the words of "you are what you eat" are truly what's happening today. You know, if we eat and digest chemicals, we will become sick creatures, and that's what's happening in our world today.
So Rudolf Steiner felt that wholesome, vital food coming from vital soils was absolutely essential for human beings to be able to think clearly and also, I guess, be at their peak and also be truly spiritual beings too. Is that correct?
That is correct. And he had a whole book he wrote, or a pamphlet, and Pfeiffer probably wrote more on nutrition, but essentially Steiner said just that in order for humans to have the potential to be the best that we can be physically, spiritually, and mentally, we need proper nutrition. And we should take that very seriously, because people's mental, physical, and spiritual qualities today in the 21st century are suffering. So
a lot of the aberrations we see out there may be due to poor nutrition.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about who brought biodynamics to this country and where Chris Mann plays in that whole sequence.
Well, the biodynamic movement in the United States, I believe, started in 1944 when Aaron Fried Pfeiffer, the student of Steiner, he was a biochemist, he was German, and he started to do a lot of the experiments of the indications that Steiner gave around the preparations and the sprays. And so he came to the United States, he lectured, and he also was a scientist. And he began, you know, trying to disseminate the information of biodynamics. And he also began implementing this hot fermented compost method in two areas of the United States back in the 60s, one in Oakland, California with a municipal compost, and then one in Pennsylvania with a poultry farm. And a year or so after those projects, he passed away. And he did write a manual, though, for industrial composting, which my understanding is what we base our industrial systems off of, these hot windrow systems. Although today we've taken it one step further with the use of, you know, heavy mechanical turning machines that are using pulverization for decomposition versus what he intended, microbial activity for proper decomposition and humus structure.
It seems like as soon as these guys start getting into agriculture, they die, right? After Rudolf Steiner died a year after his agricultural lectures, this guy's dying a year after he's introducing biodynamics in the United States. It's interesting.
Twist of fate, I guess.
Yep.
So this the biodynamic movement has been going on in the United States since the 40s, and the Biodynamic Association was then created at that time. And the Manns had visits to the United States through Martina's family's work. And one of her childhood friends had met a man whose family was from Germany and lived in this East Troy region.
East Troy, Wisconsin.
Yes. And that's the Zinnecker Farm, which is the oldest biodynamic farm in the United States. And they really felt, I think, drawn to this region because it was very similar to the geography of Germany. It was formed by the glaciers, you know, 10,000 years ago. And many Germans, you know, have moved to, you know, to Wisconsin because of those reasons. Not only the beer and the brandy, but and so they really felt that they wanted to bring the knowledge that they grew up with. Their parents were had studied anthroposophy. Their parents grew biodynamically. They had gardens. And the Manns felt like the United States needed to have a place for people to study and to learn about agriculture and biodynamic agriculture. And that was East Troy, Wisconsin, where they then started the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute about 30 years ago. And that institute does research, education, and policy work around organic systems. And they have, over the years, you know, implemented here and there the biodynamic aspect of the Manns' dream. And have provided over 900 acres of land for local farmers studying biodynamics and organics to do their practical work.
What are the main differences between organic farming and biodynamic farming?
Well, organic farming, I mean, there's certainly the National Organic Program standards have allowable inputs that some would argue aren't the best organic inputs that could be used, but essentially it's a natural system, so we're removing anything man-made and synthetic in terms of nutrients. We're removing any forms of chemicals for pest or herbaceous removal.
Synthetic chemicals.
Yeah, and so it's a natural system. And I would say the big difference with the biodynamic concept of agriculture is that every biodynamic farm truly should have animals, because animals bring the best form of fertility to the land as a closed loop, amendments and fertility for proper soil structuring. And then it also works, like I said earlier, with sort of ancient wisdom of our relationship as humans, as animals, and as plants, and how we, all of that, is affected by the rhythms of the outer universe, of forces, of planets, how we move through the solar system, of the phases of the moon. And so with biodynamics, you're not only using all natural inputs, but you're also trying to farm in a way that's holistic and in harmony with natural rhythms of the world that actually promote growth. And there's been many studies done on this and research to show that when we plant a plant at a full moon versus a new moon, there's a different growth rate. When we use different applications of herbs, there's a difference in the increase of compost temperature. So these subtle things that we don't recognize today as being significant in how we grow food, and yet they were how people grew food in ancient times. So it's nothing new. It's just being repracticed, and biodynamic brings that dynamic, that truly living, changing, dynamic way to produce, you know, food for a healthy culture into context with really what's happening in the world around us.
There is a society that sets standards for biodynamic farming, is there not, in Europe?
Yes. There's Demeter International, and then there's the Demeter USA. So Demeter was the Greek goddess of agriculture, and I'm not sure what year it was founded, but it's a certification program for biodynamic. So, you know, similar to organic certification, biodynamics has its own named certification called Demeter. And it adheres not only to, you know, many of the national organic standards, but it goes one step further in how we treat the animals, into how much natural and wild lands and hedgerows you have on your property to promote pollinators, to have closed farm fertility loop systems where you're encouraging animals and natural manuring and amendments. So there are many components to reach those certifications for Demeter.
Very few U.S. farmers are actually certified under Demeter, correct?
That's correct.
So how does somebody know when they go buy something biodynamic that it's A, the real deal, and, you know, being done properly?
Well, I think, you know, we're at a time when many people are questioning the organic standards. And like I said, some people are saying that there's too many allowances. So there are many people, like if you'd go to a farmer's market, there are a lot of vendors that aren't organic certified, but they're selling natural. And it really all starts with knowing your farmer and asking questions and having enough knowledge yourself to know what GMOs are and, you know, what questions to ask and if there's truly no chemicals and no synthetics and no GMOs in the food that farmer produces. In a same way, you know, if a farm was practicing biodynamics but was not Demeter certified, if they were, they would have a label on it, just like you would see a USDA or another named organic certification. But it would have a Demeter seal of certification on it. And if they didn't want to go through the certification process, which is, you know, can be costly and a lot of red tape, then that farmer would, in his literature and information, you know, tell his clients, you know, the types of practices they use, you know, to be biodynamic. So utilizing biodynamic principles of a planting calendar or the preparations in compost or there's two different sprays that are typically used, the horn silica and the cow manure compost or sprays, you know, these are things that the biodynamic practitioners would be using. So I guess it's all about knowing your farmer, really.
They're not sprays in the typical sense that we think of agricultural sprays. These are more probiotics for the soil.
Yeah, in a sense. Yeah.
So there's quite a pocket of biodynamic activity here, right?
There is. I mean, Michael Fields does use biodynamics in its garden program, which is an international intern education program to teach young people how to produce food and vegetables. And they do teach about that, teach about biodynamics.
And then Mr. Mann has a number of farms in this area.
Mr. Mann, yeah, and Martina have many properties that are either rented by Michael Fields for research purposes, which they do want to do more trials in the future with conventional organic and biodynamic. And over the course of 30 years, there has been biodynamic farmers that have farmed here, and there's been organic certified farmers. But there are also other young people that grow flowers or that work on other farms or who have taught at Michael Fields in the past and have gone off on their own that integrate and implement the biodynamic principles in their farming
and
practices.
How far away from here is that original farm?
It's less than a quarter mile, probably 200 feet. Right here.
And then there's you. So give us your contact information, because you sell biodynamic compost and you go out of your way to make sure that the feedstocks for that are very, very pure, very high quality, as opposed to sludges and other things that a lot of other people would use. So tell us again the name of your company, a way to get in touch with you if somebody wants to buy some of your magical stuff.
It's Grounded LLC. Go online at groundedllc.net. My contact info is Jazz Curtis, CURTES, at earthlink.net. And I'd love to not only get people to integrate this compost into their farming systems, but also to learn how to make this compost, because it truly is a wonderful process to reach a very high quality compost. And these same principles that are used in this hot fermentation are actually quite easily replicated in a cold backyard compost system. And so if we look at, you know, sort of the four elements of earth and air and water and fire of heat, and if we practice those different things and participate. Compost needs our participation. The earth's healing needs our participation. We need to all be active in what we purchase, in what we consume, and being responsible for our local food sustenance. Compost is key. We need to give back and to feed our soil in order for it to produce food to feed us with highly nutritional food. So,
heal the earth and heal ourselves.
That's right.
Biodynamic compost. How's that for a slogan?
That sounds great.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.